And now I'm going to pass on to you what I know about Judy Dickinson. Judy is a Canadian who has lived in Australia for 3.5 years. And before she came to Australia, she was in Austria for 17 years, most of which she worked in refugee camps. At present, Judy works for international teams, and something of which she'll be telling us about this afternoon. Judy's home church is in Sydney at Quakers Hill. It's Norwest Church. And she's involved in things like kids club and music ministry and teaching evangelism to home groups. So there we go. We know a little bit about Judy, and she's going to fill us in on a whole lot more. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, ladies. Oh, you're all awake. That's good. It's my job to keep you awake this afternoon. So this morning at one of the tables, someone said, "Oh, so you're like a missionary." And I said, "Yeah, I am a missionary." My work is among refugees who are coming into Sydney. And this afternoon, we're going to be walking in the footsteps of a refugee. And let's just go into dream world now. Now you can start dreaming, okay? You can kind of go off into Never Never Land. Just imagine you're back home. You're in a community, maybe in Sydney. I know in Newcastle it's maybe not so predominant, but certainly in Sydney this could be the case. You're living in a suburb in Sydney. There's a variety of different ethnic groups that live around you, and some of the men, they wear turbans, some of the women wear veils, and some of the women wear long saris, and they're different skin colors, and oh yeah, you know that those people are of that ethnic group, and those people speak that language, and you kind of figure out kind of who's who, and you notice that sometimes this particular ethnic group, they go off for a holiday somewhere, and they have a big festival somewhere up in the mountains, and your children or your grandchildren or your nieces and nephews have told you, oh yeah, and so, they weren't at school this past week because they were away to something, and you get used to that sort of thing. And then you start hearing that, oh, there's some quarrels between some of them. And there's discord, and there's protests, and there's dangerous things going on. And it gets a bit uncomfortable. But this is home for you. You're staying here. I've lived all my life here. I'm going to stay here. And so you continue life amidst all these people. And yeah, you've befriended the lady next door from Sri Lanka and this other lady from Turkey. And you seem to get along just fine. Well, you've noticed that, and actually your nieces and nephews have mentioned that one of those friends groups have been away for about a week or so, and you think nothing of it. They're up in the mountains, and yes, there has been some skirmishes going on and letterbox bombs and things going on like that. But that's them. That's not affecting me. I live here. This is home. And so it's perhaps the weekend. Maybe you have your nieces and nephews over, and maybe your family's there with you. Maybe you're alone. And you're in your kitchen, you're baking. Think of the thing that you like to be baking the best. Your favorite thing you like to be baking. Maybe you're making scones or a cake or slice or something. Well, and the kids there in the other, in the lounge, or maybe they're playing on the computer or they're watching TV, when bang! Ah, oh, you're all awake. The glass is just blown out of the windows, and then you hear screaming outside, and you run outside, and then the house next door is literally destroyed. What on earth has happened? Quickly, the news gets around. That group is up in the hills, and now they are firing bombs down on your suburb. Now it's not comfortable, is it? You see, the children next door, one of them has got a limb missing. They're lying on the ground. There's another one of their relatives. It looks like they're dead on the ground. There's blood everywhere. You can just stick around for more of this? Probably you're going to say, let's get out of here. Familiar with these articles? You got any of those in your houses? I have lots. Okay. You decided, I've had enough. I'm getting out of here. I'm running for safety. This is no longer a safe place to live. You grab a couple of these bags. You say to the kids or whoever's in the house with you, grab a couple of bags and put in it as much as you can. We're getting out of here. Pack. Let's go. We've got to be out of here in 5 minutes. Okay, turn to your friends next to you and discuss, what are you going to put in those two bags? Well, it didn't take you long, did it? Can see. You have some ideas of things you put in those bags? Be interesting to find out what from each other. Bible. Okay. Photos. 20 cloth nappies. Sorry? A bottle of water. Ah. Food. Hmm. Clean undies. Oh, something warm to wear. Your wallet. Money. Uh-huh. Deodorant. Sorry? A passport. Some sort of ID. Hmm. Well, when you hear the term refugee, sometimes you think, oh, well, then Judy must have been working with these Kosovars that came in. There were bunches up at the Singleton here. And actually, I thought, you know, maybe that's my role to be involved with those people. But as I came in contact with the churches in the Singleton area, I found out they were already involved in trying to get involved in the lives of those refugees. And I was just finding that the doors were, God was just continually closing the doors to me to go to the Kosovars. And then I realized He was saying, Judy, I'm concerned about the thousands of the refugees who are lost here in this big city of Sydney. Because there's 12,000 a year coming in to Australia that are not the Kosovars, that are not the East Timorese. That's a separate group. There's 12,000 every year. And they're all over the place. And they're lost in this new society. When I actually came to Australia 3.5 years ago, I had the experience of wanting to buy a bed. And I saw, oh, there was a sale on that I could get a bed with the interest free for a year. And I thought, oh, good, I could maybe divide up my expenses a little easier this way. So I thought, good. Went to the shop and, yes, they were keen to sell me the bed, of course, and went to fill out the application, and I couldn't get approval. Two reasons. I hadn't been in the country long enough, and I didn't know three people to give me as references. You talk about feel lonely. And think of a refugee. Doesn't he even have money to put together to get a bed? It's a very lonely life as a refugee. And this afternoon, it's empty hands. Well, we just saw how we used our hands to fill up a couple of bags with important things. How long do you think you could survive on those two bags of things? Now I'd like for you to think of what that refugee woman would miss if she's lost her home. She's had to flee. They've jumped in the car and they've driven. Now, in Australia, everybody speaks English. But say you got to the Queensland or the Victorian border and suddenly you couldn't understand them because they're speaking another language. Got a point taken here. Yeah? Well, what if they spoke a completely different language, even had a different alphabet? And you couldn't read the road signs. You couldn't understand the police officer, the person at the border, and they treated you intimidatingly. What are you doing here? They just acted like that to you. How would you feel? What would you have lost? What would you now be missing? Security. Identity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's their ability to communicate. What things would you be missing if you were in another country in that situation? What things would you be missing? Friends. Family. Oh, yeah. Going in the shop and you know just where to go to get things. You recognize all the products. You know how to say the word kilo and egg. These are things that you're missing. Well, one of the things was they would miss the ability to be able to communicate. I'm going to ask you in a moment to divide into four groups. And your activity is going to be that you are in this other country and they speak Zazaki. And in Zazaki, they don't even have, you can't even, their numbers are weird squiggles. So they have a totally different alphabet, totally different figures for numbers. So writing is of no use to you. And besides, this society tends to be illiterate anyway. They don't use pen and paper, so they can't read. You can't speak to them in their language, and yet you're in their country now. And you are being asked to line up with all of the other people in your group, all of whom speak Zazaki except you. You cannot communicate with any of these other people, but you know, you understand that you're supposed to get in chronological order according to your birthday in the year. Not the year, just the month and the day. You've got to get into chronological order. Okay? So if I could have from the door, let's see now, somewhere there, halfway through, one group come up here, and the back group go back there. And then on this side, about halfway back, let's see, we've got about 5, 6, 12. Yeah, I don't know names. There, that's it. You're right. That's where the border is. Stand up to show where you're the border. Okay, there. Thank you. That's the group, and you'll go over there. Yeah, over there somewhere. Mainly we need a line here, a line there, a line there, and a line there. Okay? So, not age, just the day and the month. So, from January 1st to December 31st. Do you understand? Yeah? In chronological order. You cannot speak, so I shouldn't be hearing any language. I shouldn't be hearing anything. No speaking. This is a silent activity. Okay? You can use your hands, your feet, your body, but not your mouth. And you can't write. Okay? Okay, stand up. Group over here, over here, over there, over there. Got one more to go, I guess. Is everyone else finished? Everyone finished over here? Okay. Okay, are we finished? Now let's see if we're in order. Who's January? Who's in January? The first one. Who's the first one? January 1 or whatever? January? January? Okay, that's group 1 there, is it? And that's January? You're January? You're starting? And you're going that way? Okay. Now in this group, who's January? Okay, and who's January here? That's going this way. Okay. Just go around quickly and say your birthday and see if you're in order. Tell the person next to you what your birthday is and see if you're in order. No. Okay. What about this group? They're still sorting it out. Okay. You got to sort it out, huh? Were there any problems, or were you all correct? One. Okay. Good. All right. Two were out. Okay. Now, what kind of emotions did you have doing that?
Frustration.
Oh, okay. Any other emotions?
Confusion.
Any other emotions going through you? Uncertainty. Oh, not knowing where to fit in. Anger. Yeah. Hey, these are real. That's real. Yeah. You had fun. Leave it to one of them. Well, I'm glad it was fun anyway. Yeah. 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 You were in your comfort zone, really, because you knew your friends. Yeah. And another one. Helplessness. Okay. Yeah. There. Yeah, you get uptight in those situations, don't you? Okay, have a seat. Well, you just went through some of the just a little smidgen of the emotions of a refugee who comes to Australia. Some of those refugee women have never gone to school in their lives. They can't read or write. And I'll be telling you a couple of stories of those very kinds of ladies. But a lot of times, people don't even know what a refugee is. So I'm going to go down to the overhead and just explain a couple of things to you. Who are refugees? Yes, that's great. Thanks, Helen. So who are refugees? Any person who, owing to a well-founded fear of being persecuted for reasons of race, religion, nationality, membership of a particular social group, or political opinion, is outside the country of his or her nationality and is unable, or, owing to such fear, is unwilling to avail him or herself of the protection of that country. That is what the United Nations declares is a refugee. Now, often people say, oh yeah, I know this rich Chinese family that lives in the northern suburbs and has a shop and he goes back and forth through his own country. Those people are migrants. They're not refugees. What's the difference between a refugee and a migrant? See if I can get it. Refugees rarely have the chance to make plans for their departure, to pack their belongings, say farewell to family and friends. Some have to flee with no notice, taking only the clothes on their backs. Others, like the family that pretends to be going on a weekend break, have to keep their plans a secret from all around them in case they are discovered. Often they have little idea about where they are going. They are running from, not running to. Often these people have experienced severe trauma. Many have been tortured. Migrants, on the other hand, have made a conscious decision about whether to come. This is not after. How do I read this thing? This is really hard work, this thing upside down. Yeah, is there anybody better at this than me? Just do it on, yeah, just take the screen away. That's a good idea. Yeah, that'd be better. There. Migrants, on the other hand, have made a conscious decision about whether to come. After a time of learning about the country from family and friends and exploring employment opportunities and having time to learn the language, migrants are able to pack their precious belongings and say goodbye to the important people in their lives. And migrants can go home if at any time things do not work out as they had hoped for, or if they get homesick. That's a migrant. Big difference, wouldn't you say? And so I hope those overheads just helped you to understand better the difference, what a refugee is and what a migrant is. There's lots of migrants in Sydney. There's a lot of refugees as well. Thousands of them. So what is the ideal? We are sitting here, I'm presuming most of us, at least most of us, are Christians here. These refugees are coming into your homeland. I'd love to call Australia my homeland, but I'm one of the foreigners too. I'm just here on a temporary visa. I'm a stranger in your land in a sense too. They're coming into your homeland. What would be the ideal situation? Here's a refugee from another ethnic and religious background. Say they're not from a Christian background. Say they're Muslims or Hindus. What would be the ideal for the Christian community, with the Christian community in mind? What would be the ideal situation? Okay. Befriend them. Okay, learn about their culture so you can approach them. Possibly have someone who speaks their language. Uh-huh, practical ways. What are some practical ways? Make sure they've got food and somewhere to sleep. And you know what? The biggest problem we have in Sydney is a place for these people to sleep. Some of them are in the streets. They were desperate and they ran for their lives. I'll tell you a couple of stories. Yeah. Okay, food, place to sleep. Teach them how to communicate. What about if they've got a severe toothache? Should we just say, oh, here's a name and address, go? It happened twice recently. Yeah. What if they've got a little baby, 2 months old? And they fled with the baby in arms. What needs would that mom have? Nappies, food. What about, medical support. Where does she go for a doctor? Vaccinations. Baby health clinics. These are helpless. You just felt helpless when you're doing that exercise. Imagine living helpless every day for months on end. You've come into the country. Your first words you just said was asylum, asylum. Please, help. And all they give you is this little, what they call a bridging visa, and you don't know whether you're going to be shipped back to your country. You don't know if they're going to let you stay. You have no rights, no privileges, no social assistance, no Medicare coverage. Very frightening. Yes?
They had a thing called Hub, where people were contacted to help these people.
Yeah. That was, the Kosovars were wonderfully helped. I mean, everybody rallied to their cause, and that was exceptional. It was just exceptional. And then same with the East Timorese. They really are well taken care of. And I think that's why God reminded me about the thousands that are in Sydney who are not. Okay, well, shall I start telling you some stories? The first two I'll tell are Christians. Barathy and her husband were in Christian ministry in their homeland. He was an evangelist. And they then started, he'd been a pastor and then evangelist, and then he started up his own little seminary. And it was in a remote area, and they wanted it as a retreat type of a seminary. And it was growing. They were up to 30 students. It had been running for 3 years. And Barathy was his secretary, his administrative assistant. She kept the school going. They even had a little computer. They had a database, and they were doing all the things on the computer. And their 10-year-old son, they decided it would be better if he stayed with grandma in the city so he could get proper education. So he spent his school days in the city living with grandma, and then he came and visited them on the holidays. Problems. One of the other religious groups that hates Christians, there's a group of them, were starting to harass them. They were coming and putting threats on them, threatening they were going to burn them alive in their seminary. They would show up and loot the place. They would destroy things, sabotage things. And then you got wind that they were actually planning to come on a certain night to burn you alive in your seminary. And so you gather with all the students outside and you build a bonfire and sleep outside so you could hear better when somebody came and they had someone on watch during the night. And sure enough, didn't that group come? And you just raised bedlam and you scared the daylights out of them and they fled. But you knew not another day was safe. Meanwhile, you got a call from your mother saying, help, please, they've come and they're threatening to abduct your son. And grandma is terrified. She's at her wit's end. She's a nervous wreck. She's scared that they're going to kidnap your son. What do you do? You've been putting up with this for several years now. You've got to get out. You've got to get away. That's the only thing that's left. You know someone who is interested in buying the land. You sell the land that your seminary's on. Use that money and get tickets. You've got a brother in Australia. You ring the brother and say, we've got to get out of the country. We're coming. And the brother says, well, you can stay with me for 2 or 3 days, but I'm sharing a house with 2 other families. In desperation, you flee the country. And you land here in Sydney and ask for political asylum. And there you sit in this house with 3 other families, which also happens to be a church parsonage, which means it's also the church office. And those 3 days turn into 4 days, which turn into 5 days, which turn into 2 weeks, which turns into 2 months, which turns into 4 months. And now the other people are getting really annoyed because you don't have any money to pay bills. You don't have the means to share the costs of living there. And it's very tight quarters.
Would you please turn the tape over at this point?
And it's very tight quarters. You're missing your ministry. You're terrified for the people who have been left back in the country. You're afraid of being stalked here by spies. You're being tormented by depression, paranoia, and you don't know what's going to happen to your future. Are they going to believe your story at the Department of Immigration, or are they not? Are they going to send you back? A very insecure feeling. How would you feel? This is a Christian couple. Very devoted to the Lord. They miss their ministry. They want to be in ministry, and they need a roof over their heads. Here's even a church that's saying, we've had enough of you. Please vacate and get yourself other accommodation. They don't have money. The Red Cross is helping them survive. That's one family sitting down in Sydney today. A lovely Christian couple. And when I went to visit them, recommended by the Red Cross and a trauma counselor, we spent about 3 hours just talking, me listening to their story, and they said, Judy, we believe you. You believe us. You believe us. Thank you for coming. They feel so alone. And how important it is for the Christian church to be available for these people. The stranger in your neighborhood might not even be a refugee. Might just be a new person in your neighborhood. How do you react when there's a stranger in your midst? Do you approach the stranger? Then there's another young couple. Christian couple. He's a doctor. You were in university, and you've just had a baby. While you were pregnant, one of these other religious groups, fanatic groups, came and torched your husband's car, and they looted his dispensary. He's the only Christian doctor in the whole area. He's the only doctor in the whole area, and now he has nothing to work with. You are 7 months pregnant, and a bunch of them come in the night and rampage your house and threaten you for your life. What are you going to do? You going to stay there? I wonder if we really would. They ran for their lives. And they're in Sydney now. And when they were referred to me again by the Red Cross. And when I went to visit them, we had a little pile of tracts, and my teammate and I were wondering, which one of these tracts should we give them? I knew that they spoke English, so I picked out one with verses of comfort. Now, I didn't know these people at all. I just had their name and where they were from. Went, introduced ourselves, and after the formalities, I offered the husband this little tract. His eyes lit up, and he said, we're Christians too! And we're looking for a church to go to. Can you help us? And as we started listening to their story, their background, what kind of a church they were used to and what they were looking for, it was just incredible. The very church that my teammate had chosen to make his home church in that area was exactly the kind of church for them. And in fact, most of the congregation is from the ethnic background that this particular refugee is. A year ago, I would have not had that contact. I'm just amazed at God's timing. My coworker went home, got somebody to arrange for someone to pick them up for church on Sunday. So that was done. You think, oh, wasn't that good? Somebody picked them up and took them to church. They did more than that. That family then invited them home to lunch. And that family also arranged to the church that the church give them a box of groceries to go home with. Because they were living in very tight quarters with a family they had only been introduced to days before. And they were actually quite unwelcome because they weren't a Christian family. And now this family had food to cook with. The Christians went the extra mile and thought through those little things that make a difference. We take for granted. But when you don't have the money to go out and buy, that means a lot. And now that couple, we started praying for them that they would get residency, that they would get housing. And would you believe within 2 weeks, both of those prayers were answered? I say that was a miracle because residency often takes refugees over a year to get. They had it within 2 months of coming to the country. Well, those were two Christian situations. Now let's step outside of the Christian scene. Let's go to the Muslim world. And we think, oh, us and them. Let me tell you, some of the Muslim people are the nicest people you could run into. They are the most hospitable people. There's Saime, a Kurd from Turkey, who watched on television back in February when all these uprisings were happening down in Sydney and the Kurds destroyed the Greek embassy and all this. Anybody? Yeah. Wonder what was going on in your minds. What kind of emotions, reactions were we having? Maybe we thought we were quite disgruntled with these people and how dare they and so forth. You know that as those faces of those Kurds flashed on the screen, I knew a great number of them. I had been in their homes and visited them. And one of them, who was charged with storming that Greek embassy, is one of our contacts. Ahmed's wife is Saime. I originally had Ahmed as my English student when he first arrived here about 2.5 years ago. And then some months later, his wife Saima showed up, and she had her the bandana on, and very humble village kind of a girl, and their three children. They arrived in the country, and Ahmed heard me talking to another lady, another Kurdish lady, about why I do what I do, and I was talking about God. And Ahmed said, "Oh, my wife, she loves God too. She prays to Him 5 times a day." And she would like to learn English, but with children it's difficult. So I thought, home tutor. And I already knew of a lady who wanted to help a refugee family. So I connected Cheryl with that family. And Cheryl then went and visited every week, helping Saima learn how to read and write for the first time in her life. A lady in her 20s with 3 children had never written or read in her life. Today, Saima reads and writes, 2 years later, has been through courses, English courses, several of them, and is becoming quite proficient in English, not just speaking, but reading and writing. She still can't read and write in her own language. But more than that, Cheryl prayed that those children would be able to come to Bible club at her church. Muslims, will they allow it? Mom and Dad allowed it. And the 3 kids are going off to Bible club each week. Then Cheryl invites Saima to come to an evangelistic women's outreach at the church. Saima comes with her own interpreter and thanks the person who gives the message afterwards. Then, a couple of years later, I hear that even Ahmed has come to an evangelistic service at the church. And so we see step by step. How has it happened? By Cheryl befriending Saima and the family. And Saima says to this day, Cheryl is her best friend in Australia. She has lots of Kurdish friends, but that's what she says about Cheryl. Now that says something, doesn't it? It's relationships. Saima came with nothing. She couldn't write, she couldn't read, she couldn't speak. She had very little of this world's possessions. What did she have to offer? She certainly offered her hospitality and a lot for Cheryl to learn and appreciate from her culture. Keep praying for Saima. She doesn't know the Lord yet, and her children don't either, but they love the Jesus video. They're even passing it around to their friends. Another story is with Shingle. Shingle's also a Kurd from Turkey. When I started contact with Shingle, it was to home tutor her in English. And then it came Christmas time, and I wanted to give them a Christmas package, so I gave them a package with the Jesus video in it. Well, then summer holidays came, February came, and I went back to visit them. And Shingle's husband came into the lounge room, and he picked up that Jesus video and said, "Judy, I pay you for this?" I said, no, it's a gift. He said, Thank you. I looked everywhere in Turkey for the gospel and couldn't find it." And I said, "Well, Duskin, I've got the gospel book. Would you like one?" "You have?" "Yes." So I then on the next week when I arrive, he walks and he says, "You have my book for me?" Yes, I did. A few weeks later, I'm home tutoring Shengo. Judy, Dusken problem. Dusken go work on train. Dusken take in Jill. I know read in Jill. Would you like an in Jill shingle? Yes! So I got another one. This one for her. A few weeks later. Judy, problem. Dusken telephone father in Turkey. Speak about in Jill, about Jesus. Father want in Jill. So we get another angel and send that to Turkey. Now, just a couple of weeks ago, we sent off another angel to her nephew who had been visiting here. And he wanted two copies because he wanted one for his flatmate. He's a university student, a med student. And she said, "Judy, problem. I thought, how did it go? We only could send one to my nephew because Dusken gave the other one to one of his friends. He was sitting in the car waiting for me when I was shopping, and his friend was in the car sitting with them, and Dusken was reading the New Testament, and his friend asked him, 'What are you reading?' And Dusken told him it's the Injil, and his friend said, 'Can I have it?' And so Dusken gave it to him. So Judy, only one Injil. They're keeping the Bible Society going and providing Turkish Injils. But this is all happening just by going every week, being a friend to these people. We don't know how God is going to use us. Another thing happened. When their nephew was visiting here, I got a copy of the Jesus video for the nephew to take back to Turkey. The night before his flight, of course, he packed everything into his suitcase, but his suitcase was open, and Shingo's little 5-year-old son saw the Jesus video. So he went over and pulled it out of the case and went and put it in the video recorder to watch it. Well, the nephew didn't see that happen, so the nephew took off the next morning to Turkey with just the case. Why didn't you have that? I gave you a Jesus video. Oh, we gave it to our friends. And so we don't know how far and wide the gospel is going just because of one contact. Now this couple, Shengil and Dusken, are just starting to grapple with, Jesus died for me. That's new to them. So they haven't come to the Lord yet, but they're already spreading the gospel. So pray for Shengil and Dusken in Blacktown. Now I see my work is to mobilize the local Australian Christians to be doing this. So it's not just me out there. And God has wonderfully been mobilizing volunteers. And you know how old my latest volunteers were? A couple, she's 80 and he's 90. Never too old, ladies. You're never too old to befriend a stranger. And let me just take you to some scriptures to show what scriptures have to say about this sort of thing. Now, if you want to copy any of those down, you're welcome to. I will just go to three of them. Leviticus 19:34, verses 33 and 34. Now, I'm reading from the New International Version. If you want to read this, follow along, you're welcome to. When an alien lives with you in your land, do not mistreat him. Now that's a wide open word, isn't it? Mistreat. What does it mean to mistreat? Think about that. The alien living with you must be treated as one of your native born. Love him as yourself. For you were aliens in Egypt. I'm the Lord your God. God has spoken. That's what the Lord says. The alien living with you must be treated as one of your native born. Love him as yourself. Going over to Leviticus 24, verse 22. you are to have the same law for the alien and the native born. I am the Lord your God. Not an us and them situation, is it? And is that presuming that the native has the same religious background that you do? The same values? No. Deuteronomy 18, chapter 10, verse 18 is the last one that I'll share with you at this point. God defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the alien, giving him food and clothing. Now, I don't know about you, but often I've thought, yeah, the fatherless and the widow, but the alien too. Now, I don't know about you, when you think about aliens, you think of people from Mars or from outer space. But we know what it's meaning here, don't we? The outsider, the stranger. They have a special place in God's heart. And I will leave this up here for people to copy down these verses. It'd be good to run through them. Just see what God says about treating foreigners in your land. And think of Ruth. Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner? I wonder how many foreigners would say that of us. Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner? Why? Why are you so kind to me? Why are you helping me? And it's those opportunities when we can share that God loves them. And God did something spectacular for them. No other religion in the world does this. No other religion in the world tells you that God gave of Himself. That God gave all He had for you. And that is good news for a refugee, that God loves them and has done something spectacular for them. And God wants them to know Him personally. That's a message we can share. And sometimes people say, oh, so your work is humanitarian, helping them with all their needs and so forth. We start out at every opportunity we can get, we're sharing the gospel with these people. Sometimes it's right at the beginning. Sometimes it takes a little bit of footwork at first. But we seek out those opportunities because we see the opportunity to share Christ with these people. As Rosemary this morning pointed out, often these people from like the Middle East, from Muslim countries, to them, religion and daily life is just intertwined. And it's very natural to talk about God. Whereas in our society, we don't talk about religion. We seek out opportunities to talk about religion. But in their life, it's intertwined even in their language to talk about God. And so it's much easier than we think it is. So, could I encourage you to pray for a refugee? Remember that we are refugees. But you never thought about yourself being a refugee, did you? Look at Psalm 91, verses 1 to 4. Psalm 91, verses 1 to 4. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High God will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Surely He will save you from the fowler's snare and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and your rampart. And if you have experienced that in your life, you have something to offer the stranger in your midst. So I would encourage you to approach strangers. Be God's instrument. pray for the unknown refugees, those people who are lost in the big city of Sydney. Pray for a refugee. Pray for a refugee woman, a refugee child. Maybe there's nobody else in the world praying for them. You don't know them by name. You just imagine there must be someone down there. There's a refugee woman that God would minister to and would bring Christians to. And if you would like to know more about what I'm doing, I do have a few copies of my newsletter on the table as you go out. I appreciate being able to share with you, and I trust that this afternoon has given you an opportunity to walk in the footsteps of those who have empty hands. Footsteps of a refugee. The people who are very special on God's heart. Thank you.